And now, for our feature presentation. Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind. Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Blood Bond. Narrated by Thomas Penny. With performances by Dylan Lynch, James Lewis, David Coyne, James Konacek, Nanette Savard, Jeff Baker, Terrence Hazelford, Richard Rowan, Michael Replogle, Ken Jackson, Christopher Graybill, Michael Glenn, Erica Rose, Nathaniel Perry, Chris Rowan, and Mort Shelby. Blood Bond Number 2, Brotherhood of the Gun.
They were blood brothers, bonded by the Cheyenne ritual that made them as one. And more importantly, they were brothers of the wolf. Two young men, Matt Bodine and Sam August Webster Two Wolves. The two men could, and had many times, passed as having the same mother, which they did not. Both possessed the same lean hips and heavy upper torso musculature. Sam's eyes were black, Matt's were blue. Sam's hair was black, Bodine's hair was dark brown. They were the same height and very nearly the same weight. Both wore the same type of three-stone necklace around their necks, the stones pierced by rawhide. Both had gone through the Cheyenne coming of manhood, and each would carry the scars on his chest until death turned the soulless flesh into dust. They were both Onihamahan, friends of the wolf. Both revered the great gray wolf, and both had raised wolf cubs as boys. The Indians did not have the fear of the wolf that the white man possessed, probably because the Indians took the time to understand animal behavior. Matt had learned the white man never took the time. Any animal he didn't understand, he wanted to kill.
Are we going to have to ride forever to reach Arizona?
I think we're in the territory, brother. I also think we're being followed.
Neither one of them knew it, but they were already in Arizona, having crossed the border 2 days back.
You think? Huh. I have known about that for at least 2 hours.
Nice of you to say something about it.
I was waiting for you to dig the sand out of your eyes and ears and discover it yourself. You would have probably noticed something amiss just before they, whoever they might be, conked you on the head.
At least four of them, I figure. Maybe more.
I would say four, but you're right. Maybe more.
There are Apache here. But there are a lot of Navajo and Zuni, too. Hualapai and Kaibab are to the west of us.
Those behind us are not Indians. We'd probably have never spotted an Indian. At least you wouldn't have.
The Blood Brothers were always needling each other, and had been for years. Neither took it seriously. Matt pulled his Winchester out of the boot, shucked around into the chamber, eased the hammer down, and rode with a rifle laid across his saddle horn. Sam Two Wolves did the same. Sam pointed to the west, and Matt cut his eyes. The ruins of an ancient pueblo could be seen.
Navajo?
Those who came before us.
Let's cut straight south. Keep your eyes open for Los Gigantes Butte. We want to swing to the west of that.
We're running low on water. This would not be a good time for us to get caught up in a trap.
Well, Lukachukai Creek is south and west of the butte. But a cowboy told me a while back that there's also a tank in the rocks just up ahead. If he knew what he was talking about and it isn't dry.
You certainly know how to lift a body's spirits.
Matt twisted in the saddle, looking behind him. Those following them were no longer trying to hide their presence. The dust trail was clearly visible.
I don't like it.
Neither do I. Let's find that tank, and find it quick!
And full.
Yeah!
It wasn't full, but there was more than enough water to fill their canteens, water their horses, fill a coffee pot, and still have enough for several days should they have to defend the place. The tank was located high in the rocks, with graze for the horses and good cover for both man and beast. Neither Matt nor Sam were too worried about the men following them. If anything, the men following should be worried about what would happen should they catch up with Matt and Sam. Matt's reputation as a gun handler had begun when he was just a boy. He killed his first man at age 14, the bully prodding the boy into a fight. The bully had not even managed to clear leather. At 17, Bodine went off to live with the Cheyenne for a year. He'd been spending forbidden time with them since a boy, often for weeks at a time. At 18, he was riding shotgun for gold shipments. Outlaws tried twice to take the shipment. Four more men were planted in unmarked graves. At 19, he began scouting for the army. From then until he turned 25, Matt Bodine's guns became legend in the West. His fists also were much feared. Bodine knew Indian wrestling, boxing, and down-and-dirty kick-and-stomp barroom brawling. Despite it all, Bodine's mother, a schoolteacher, saw to it that the boy was very well educated. Sam Two Wolves, a half-breed, his mother coming from an old Vermont family, did not have a reputation as a gunfighter, but he was still feared. He was even better educated than Bodine, having been schooled at a university back east. It was his mother's dying wish. Sam's father was the famed war chief Medicine Horse, who died on Last Stand Hill during the Custer fight. Medicine Horse rode up to Custer unarmed except for a coup stick, wishing to die rather than live in disgrace. Matt and Sam had witnessed the Custer fight from atop a hill overlooking the valley of the Little Bighorn, and they would spend their lives trying to forget the awful sight.
I wonder who those guys following us are, and what they want.
If I had a crystal ball, I'd tell you.
Sam was stretched out flat on his back in the shade of a boulder. It was the fall of the year, and it was hot. Not the blistering heat of full summer, but still hot enough to kill a man if he wasn't careful.
Well, I guess we know what they want. Us.
Yeah, but why?
Matt had taken his rifle and moved to a guarded position where he could look out over the land below them.
I'm certain your sordid reputation has something to do with this. What would my poor mother think? Me keeping company with a notorious gunfighter.
Sam rolled to his knees, picking up his rifle.
Very funny.
So, brother, what are we going to do about this slight problem facing us?
About us finding out what they want.
Why don't you invite them up for coffee?
Hey! What's the matter with you guys? What's the idea of shooting at us? I think you people got the wrong guys! We haven't done anything to you!
Give us gold and you can ride on!
Gold? What gold?
We don't have any gold! I told you, you got the wrong people!
You're a damn liar! We've been trailing you two all the way from Green River! You thought you throwed us off when you left the fork of the Walker just inside the territory. But I want that poke you mined out. And we'll take that woman with you too, mister. Then you can ride on. We know she's nothing but a stray. She ain't worth dying over.
Sam sat straight up, his back against the boulder.
Woman?
I told you to cut your hair.
My hair is no longer than yours, Mary.
What woman? There's nobody up here but Sam and me.
Have Sam sing out.
What do you want, you nitwit?
You boys show yourselves. If you ain't Wellman and the girl, you can ride on out.
You believe that, Matt?
About as much as I believe in Santa Claus. They were gonna rob those people, Sam.
Hell with you, mister. I got no reason to take the word of a damn thief.
Here we go. Robin and his hood strike another blow for the poor and downtrodden.
We'll starve you out.
Not likely. We have plenty of food.
You die of thirst, then.
No, we won't. The tank was full. But you boys are gonna get mighty thirsty if you hang around long.
We'll make a deal with you.
I don't deal with scum.
Then die, you bastards.
Matt and Sam pulled their saddles over their upper torsos to help against any flattened ricochet and let the outlaws bang away. Their horses were just below them in a small depression, safe from any stray bullets. They made no attempt to return the fire. When the gunfire stopped, Sam and Matt lifted up to where they could see and looked out. The outlaws were fogging in away from the rocks, five of them heading west.
They must have picked up our trail at the fork, thinking it was the man and the girl. We took the east fork. Now those scum are heading west to pick up the trail.
Matt looked up at the sky. It would be dark in a couple of hours.
No point in taking off after them now. We might ride smack into an ambush. We'll spend the night and pick up the trail in the morning. If that's all right with you, that is.
Oh, I think I'll tag along with you. Somebody has to watch your back trail.
Matt reached down for the blackened coffee pot. One of the outlaw's slugs had torn the pot apart.
Son of a bitch!
Now that irritates me. Anybody who would deprive a man of his coffee is just no damn good!
Both men were still griping as they saddled up and rode out the next morning. Western men like their coffee, and they like it often. To wake up without a pot of coffee strong enough to dissolve a horseshoe is just a lousy way to start the day.
I get my hands on those damn thieving bums. I'm gonna make them wish they'd never ridden up to that tank.
I sure wish I had a cup of coffee. Where do you suppose the nearest town is?
The way we're heading, there's supposed to be a trading post just built. Some guy named Hubble built it. But it's a good 90 miles from here. 3 days without coffee.
They crossed Lukachukai Creek and made camp in Chinle Valley. They did not push their horses or themselves, for this was rugged country, and they wanted to spare their horses. The tracks of the outlaws were easy to follow, and from the way they were traveling, the thieves were also taking it easy, not wanting to come up with a lame horse and be set afoot in this country. They reached the trading post during the late afternoon of the third day. A number of horses were tied at the hitch rails in front of a long and low building. The place appeared to be full of customers. Odd for this sparsely populated land. Matt and Sam reined up in back of the building. Both men slipped the hammer thongs from their guns as soon as their boots touched the ground. Sam took one look at the hoof-chewed ground around the hitch rails.
Those are our people, all right. See the chipped-out place on that shoe?
Yeah. Come on, I want a drink first, and then we'll see about settling up for a new coffee pot.
The adobe and stone trading post bore the scars of many Indian attacks. The wooden support posts of the porch roof were embedded with arrowheads. Sam Two Wolves looked at the broken shank of one.
Apache.
Yeah. They've attacked as far north as the middle of Utah Territory, but they back off when they get into Ute country. They might refuse to serve you in here, you know.
They can try.
The bartender didn't even blink when Matt and Sam ordered whiskey with a beer chaser. But he, along with everyone else in the dark bar room, did notice the tied-down twin guns of the strangers. Two Wolves and Bodine took their drinks to the far end of the bar, where their backs would be facing a wall, and they could get a good look at everybody in the place. It wasn't a pleasant view.
Did you ever see so many ugly people gathered in one place in all your life?
For a fact, if a beauty contest was held in this place, nobody would win.
What the hell is your problem?
Who owns that horse with the 4V brand?
Matt knew full well that somebody had used a running iron to make the brand, probably out of a double W.
I do. If it's any of your damn business, which it ain't.
You owe us a coffee pot.
Huh? I don't owe you nothing, mister. But I just might decide to give you a skinned head if you don't shut your mouth.
The only thing you're gonna give me is a new coffee pot. Now buy it from the man, set it on the bar, shut your big mouth, and get your butt back in the chair you just vacated.
Rah!
the outlaw lumbered toward the bar, heading straight for Matt, his big hands balled into fists. Sam stepped aside, his hands by his side, so he could watch the crowd and grab iron if anybody tried to interfere. Matt opened the dance with a short, straight right fist to the man's mouth. The blow knocked the outlaw spitting. He crashed into a table and sent beer mugs and cards and poker chips flying. He bounced to his boots and charged Bodine.
I'll rip your fucking head off for that, you shit!
Bodine stuck out one boot and tripped the outlaw. He slammed into the bar, belly high, and knocked the wind out of himself and a plank out of the bar just as Bodine slugged him twice above the kidney with a left and right. The outlaw staggered and turned, his eyes filled with pain and confusion. Bodine hammered him twice in the face with a left and a right combination and then drove his fist into the man's belly. As the burly outlaw slowly sank to his knees, Bodine grabbed him behind the head and brought his knee up, all in one fast, practiced movement. Knee connected with nose, and nose got flattened. Bodine turned his back to the man and faced the bartender as the outlaw fell on the floor, blood pouring from his broken nose.
Fill up a beer mug, friend. I just worked up a thirst.
You just worked yourself up for killing is what you just done. That there's Ray Porter, the Idaho Gunslick, and this room is filled with his men. What do you think about that, hotshot?
Bodine drained half his beer, set the mug on the bar, and looked at the room full of gunslicks. He jerked a thumb toward Sam.
3 days ago, me and my buddy here was riding south, just north of the Los Gigantes Butte, when we decided to camp near a tank.
He pointed to the unconscious gun hand from Idaho territory.
This jerk and four other jerks started shooting at us. They gave it up after about an hour, but not before they shot up my coffee pot. Now, I'm fixing to get a couple of dollars out of this hombre's pocket and buy me a new coffee pot. And if anybody feels like they want to stop me, just come on. Now, does anybody want to start this dance?
A man pushed his chair back and stood up, his hand close to the butts of his guns.
That just plumb breaks my heart. But I tell you what you should have done, mister. You should have carried two coffee pots. But it don't matter no more, because you ain't going to be needing them after today.
He grabbed for his guns. And Bodine cleared leather, cocked, and shot him just as the man's hands gripped the butts and he began his lift. The slug took the man directly in the center of the chest, piercing the heart. He was dead as he hit the floor.
Jesus H. Christ. He's as fast as Smoke Jensen.
What's your name, buddy?
Matt Bodine. And this is my brother, Sam Two Wolves.
The one who had spoken first after the gunfight slowly stood up, his hands in plain sight, and walked to the door.
Yep, I'm gone. I'll be taking me a bath and a shave out back.
Another man stood up, walking carefully.
Tell that boy to fill another tub, Harry. I feel the need for a soap myself. I'll get my extra set of long johns from the saddlebags and join you in a minute.
A man shouldn't ought to plug another man's coffee pot. Hard enough rolling out on a cold morning with coffee waiting. Plumb discouraging without it. You help yourself to some greenbacks from Porter, Matt. He owes you a coffee pot.
Thank you.
Matt knelt down and pulled a wad from Porter's pocket. He took $2 and handed them to the barkeep.
One coffee pot, please.
Yes, sir, Mr. Bodine. I'll be back in a jiffy. Will there be anything else, sir?
Coffee beans, flour, and bacon. We'll settle up when I leave.
Yes, sir.
And grind the coffee fine. We like it stout.
Yes, sir, Mr. Two Wolves.
Matt turned to face the crowd.
You tell Porter that we're riding to join up with the man and the girl that Porter wants to rob. Tell him if I see his ugly face again, I'll kill him on the spot, no questions asked.
After resupplying and settling up, the brothers rode away from Hubble's without a hitch.
My back was getting sort of itchy riding away from that place, brother.
I know the feeling. And I don't think my words changed any minds back there.
No. They'll be coming after the man and the girl, whether we're along or not. They smell gold. Some of Porter's men must have come to that trading post to link up with them.
Yeah. You ever heard of a gunfighter named Porter?
No. I think he's probably more thief and outlaw than gunslick. But I did see Don Bradley back there.
So did I. And I have to wonder about that. He's too good with a gun to be mixed up with a small-timer like Porter. Last I heard, Don was getting top dollar for his skills. Who else did you see? I didn't have much time for eyeballing.
Bob Doyle is the only other that I knew. I saw three or four young punks with fancy rigs. I guess they're out to make a reputation.
What they'll probably get is an unmarked grave. Let's play a hunch, Sam. Let's make a guess that Wellman and the girl deliberately took the West Fork of Walker Creek to throw off Porter and his men. You with me?
Yes. Then they headed straight south. You know this country, Matt. I don't. Where are they going?
I don't know. Green River is a long way from here. They were heading straight south all the way until they took the West Fork. Two people, a man and a woman, maybe just a girl, heading straight into Apache country. Why, Sam?
And carrying gold. A lot of gold, I guess. I don't know the why of it. But there's one way to find out.
Catch up with them and ask.
That's it.
You game?
That goes without saying.
The two young men turned their horses and headed south. They pointed the horses' noses toward one of the most dangerous places left on the American continent. The great rugged mountains and the inhospitable deserts and the fierce warriors who inhabited that land. It was called Apache Country. They made camp the first night at the northern tip of Wide Ruin Wash. It had been slow and careful going, always checking their back trail and keeping a close watch left, right, and in front of them. This land did contain a lot of friendly Indians, mostly Navajo and Zuni, most of them peaceful farmers. But the Apache roamed all over the territory, and they hated the white man with a passion. One thing Bodine and Sam knew for a fact, they would not allow themselves to be taken alive by the Apache. They found a small but heavily armed wagon train on the northern edge of the Painted Desert, then stopped for coffee and to listen for any information those in the train might have about a man and a woman traveling alone. Starting on their second cup, the coffee was strong enough to dissolve nails, Bodine and Sam perked their ears up when they learned something.
Fool's mission. That's what them two is on. Damned if I'd be heading south of Horsehead Crossing with anything less than the army with me. Besides, there ain't nothing left of that little girl no ways. And who'd want anything to do with the girl after the Injuns got done with her?
Sam hid his smile behind his tin cup. Only Matt noticed the curving of his lips. Both men knew that Indians loved children of any color and raised them well, if harshly, when judged against white standards. If it was a boy, he had a rougher time of it among many tribes, but if he was spunky enough, he could make it.
How's the coffee, boys?
Good. We'll have another.
We left a town over in New Mexico territory, what was left of it. What wasn't drying up and blowing away was saddling up or hitching up and riding away. Fool place to build a town anyways. You boys looking for work?
No. We got us a little poke from working up in Wyoming and thought we'd just see the country. Thought it best to head south for the winter, though.
Well, don't head too much farther south. The Apaches is on the move. We just heard about them raiding a ranch over yonder way about a month ago. Killed everybody there. Feller and his wife and three hands. It was awful what them savages done to them. Death was a merciful thing. Kidnapped a little girl and took her God knows where. Another bunch of them come through here last week, raided another ranch. Killed all them folks too. It's a sorry time, boys.
You were talking about someone on a fool's mission. Relatives of the child who was taken from the ranch?
You betcha. Couple of fools is what they is. The girl's grandfather, fella named Wellman, and some woman he picked up along the way who lost an older brother to the Apache some 12 years back. She admitted she was only 8 or so when they snatched him, and didn't think she'd be able to recognize him. Now ain't that about the dumbest thing you ever heard of? Brother would be more than 20 years old now, according to her. And if he's alive, he's nothing but a goddamn Injun by now. Probably can't even speak English no more.
Matt turned to Sam and winked at him.
That must be those tracks we keep seeing ahead of us. 3-4 days old.
You bet it is, boys. That old man, that girl, is heading straight south. They think the little girl's being held somewhere in the vicinity of the Gila Mountains. That's Chapo's country. And if there ever was a bad one, Chapo is it.
He would get no argument there. Chapo's bunch were as savage as they come. Chapo's Apache name was unpronounceable to whites, so somewhere down the line, so the story went, an army lieutenant had nicknamed him Chapo. It stuck. Sam and Bodine finished their coffee and headed over to where their horses were picketed with those of the wagon train.
I just put it together, Matt. Dick Wellman.
Yeah, me too. Dick Wellman. That's a hard man, brother. That mountain man might be old, but he's still tough as nails and meaner than a silver tip. But for the life of me, I can't imagine him taking a girl into Apache country.
Chapo's country at that. We'd best find us a pack horse at the post and lay in the supplies. Especially 44 rounds.
You're reading my mind, brother.
At supper, they had told the people what they were going to do. They pulled out at dawn the next morning. Everyone in the train turned out to see them off.
You boys is young and mighty brave. But going up against Chapo and his bunch is a stupid thing to do. I wish you'd think about it.
Matt and Sam lifted their hands in acknowledgement of the warning and rode out of the protection of the wagon train. They rode through the stillness of the painted desert, and it was a sight that neither of them had ever seen before and would never forget. They both found it a lonely and foreboding place, and they marveled at the fallen stone trees and wondered how old they were. How long had they lain in this brooding land? They picked their way through the silent land, gradually cutting west. They had to resupply at Horsehead Crossing.
We're close to them.
Sam sat drinking the last of his coffee and watching the sun sink slowly behind the horizon. The rays of the dying sun painted multicolor hues over the stark landscape.
Those horse droppings we looked at pretty well confirm we're not more than a few miles behind them. Two riders and a pack horse, and the pack horse is not heavily loaded.
Apaches have no use for gold, brother. If Wellman is carrying several sacks of gold, he isn't planning on buying his granddaughter's freedom from Chapo. Somebody else is involved in this.
Maybe Chapo is raiding the ranches and kidnapping the kids for someone else.
For example?
Who knows? To sell them into slavery, maybe. Or maybe if the kids are young enough, to sell to people who want kids but can't have children of their own. Or maybe there's a darker side to all of this. If you know what I mean.
Yes, I do. However, I would prefer not to think about that. It's too disgusting for words.
But possible.
Oh, yes.
I think, brother, we need to catch up with Wellman tomorrow and find out what he thinks.
What about Wellman?
Ten more ought to do it, Mavern. 10 pretty little girls just like this one.
Lake lit a long, thin Mexican cigar. He fixed his one steady eye on Mavern. The other eye was an off-color pale blue, and it drooped and was cockeyed. He'd been kicked by a horse in the side of the face some years back, breaking his cheekbone and jaw, and he'd never had it set properly.
That'll give us 25 we can ship down to Captain Morgan. I'll get word to Chapo.
Tell him to hurry up. Tell him I'll give him 10 rifles and a case of ammunition for each girl he brings me.
That ought to prod him into action. Lake, some of the boys was wondering if maybe, they could, you know.
Mavern winked and jerked a thumb toward the girl.
No! And I'll kill any man who touches one! Morgan says the Arab sheiks demand the girls to be pure and blonde and not over 10 years old. You make damn sure the men understand that.
Yes, sir, Lake. Anything you say.
We're getting big money for these kids, Mavern. And it's sure better than robbing banks and rustling beeves. So, let's don't screw it up.
Yes, sir, Lake. Ain't none of the kids been touched. Some of the boys was just asking us all.
You make certain they understand, Mavern. And they'd better understand.
I'll sure do it, Lake. Count on me.
Oh, I do, Mavern. I do for a fact.
Both Sam and Matt were startled and highly irritated, and they both immediately froze where they were. For someone to have slipped up on them meant that the person was very, very good and probably very, very dangerous. And Matt had a good idea who was holding the rifle on them.
Wellman?
Maybe.
I'm Matt Bodine. This is my brother, Sam Two Wolves.
Bodine, huh? The Wyoming Gunslick?
I've used my guns, yes. I've never hired them out.
And Two Wolves, son of Medicine Horse?
That is correct.
I knowed him. He's a good man. It's a sorry business what took place in the Rosebuds. Custer was a fool. You got any coffee left in that pot?
Probably a cup. It ought to still be hot.
Well, pour me some. I'm coming in.
The old mountain man moved as silently as a wraith. He grinned at Matt and Sam and began poking around in the coals, adding twigs to build up the fire. Then he tossed a couple of sticks onto it.
Don't y'all worry none. Ain't no patches around here, boys. Not no more. But you was right in killing this fire before dark come. You smelled the dust, huh?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, there was patches, all right. But they veered off to the west. Probably gonna raid some Hopis and steal their horses. They long gone now. You've been on my back trail now for some days. You mind telling me what's going on?
Matt leveled with him, starting with Porter trying to kill them. He ended with their suspicions about someone other than Chapo being involved in the kidnapping.
There ain't much to Porter. He's a thief, a murderer, two-bit bank robber, bully, coward. He's all around no good. He comes traipsing down this way, we'll just blow him out of the saddle and let the buzzards eat him.
Can I come in now, Mr. Wellman? It's cold out here.
Come on, Laurie. Bring the horses in with you, child.
First thing that popped into Matt's head was that Laurie was anything but a child. Looking at Sam, he got the impression his brother felt the same way. Blonde hair and blue eyes, and a little bitty thing, maybe 5 feet tall. All dressed up in men's breeches, both jeans and shirt poked out in all the right places, for sure. Both Matt and Sam got to their boots when she walked up to the fire and shook the coffee pot. It was empty. Wellman had drained it. She tossed the pot to Matt and plopped down on the ground.
Well, make some more. Don't just stand there looking like a jackass.
Matt tossed the coffee pot back to Lori.
You want some coffee, you make it yourself, or learn how to ask in a nice way.
Listen, you son of a bitch. I asked for some fucking coffee because I was expecting you to be polite. I didn't ask because I wanted to listen to any shit, so quit bitching and make some fucking coffee.
Oh, she sure got a salty one, ain't you, boys? Oh, I come up on her in Utah. She was toting a rifle thereabouts as big as she is and riding a wall-eyed gelding with the meanest look I ever did see on a horse.
You should have left her up there.
Make some coffee, girl. Act nice.
Why should I?
Wellman looked at Matt.
Because I got me a notion these boys been following us so they can throw in with us. That notion correct, boy?
Yes.
Lori glared at Matt across the small fire.
Why would you want to do that? You don't know us. How do we know you aren't outlaws? And if you're not up to no good, why are you out here in the middle of this godforsaken place?
We're not outlaws, miss. Both of us own large ranches up in Wyoming. Profitable operations. Both of us lost people we cared for during the Custer fight. We needed to get away from the area for a time. That's why we're out here.
You got Injun blood in you, don't you?
Yes. My father was Cheyenne, and my mother was white.
I don't like Injuns.
That is certainly your prerogative, however misguided. If you know me and don't like me, I can't understand that. If you don't know me and don't like me, that's ignorance on your part.
I ain't ignorant. But you talk funny.
Educated. Medicine Horse sent him to a fancy college back east so he could learn all them big words. Medicine Horse was a fine man, Laurie. From what I can gather, so's Two Wolves.
Who?
Sam. That's his Indian name, Two Wolves. And Bodine ain't no outlaw, girl. He's a gunslinger who always fights on the side of the law or the good and just.
Robin and his hood, bringing justice to the wild frontier.
You're about half smart, Alec, ain't you?
So I've been told, miss. Usually by him.
He jerked a thumb toward Matt. Lori cut her eyes to Sam.
And if someone else tells you?
Sam has his own graveyards.
Lori shut up and concentrated on making the coffee.
Outlaw by the name of Lake is bankrolling Chapo. Chapo and his braves case out a ranch for young blonde girls, 10 years old or under. This has been going on for about a year, and I don't guess anybody other than me has put it all together. Or if they did, they ain't done nothing about it.
They sell them into slavery?
It's worse than that. One shipload went to South America. Another went to the Arabs. That's where the next ship will be heading to.
There are disagreeable people among all races.
Yeah, well, that ain't exactly the way I'd say it. But that'll do for the time being.
Lake, the bank robber?
That's him. Bank robber, among other things. He's filth more than anything else. Got him an army of about 50 or so men that's just as bad or worse than he is. He's got him a place somewhere down in the Patagonias, right close to the Mexican border. It's an old fort, built to withstand damn near any army.
Have you ever seen it?
Several times. Last time was about 25 years ago. The Mexican army built it out of adobe and rock. Walls 12, 15 feet high and 2, 3 feet thick. They was going to protect the town nearby, but the town never did amount to nothing, so the soldiers left. The girls was taken by wagon over to a little town on the Gulf of California, where the coyote runs into the Gulf. They're loaded on ship there.
The ship's captain?
Morgan. Run slave ships back when that was a booming business. He's a pirate, among other things.
The name of the ship?
The Virgin Princess.
Lori might sometimes have the disposition of a hyena and the mouth of a painted-up hurdy-gurdy girl, but Matt would give her good marks for cooking. He admitted that reluctantly. She fried up bacon and then cut up potatoes and a little bit of onion and red peppers. She'd made pan bread in another skillet and served up a good breakfast. But her coffee was a tad weak for the men. However, no one had yet mentioned that to her, since none of the three felt up to receiving a good cussing this early in the morning, especially after such a good breakfast.
This is an excellent breakfast, Miss Lori.
Thank you, Sam. Please drop the miss, just Lori.
Coffee's weak.
Well, you can take that coffee and the cup you're drinking it out of and shove it up your ass. Oh, and while you're at it...
Lori, I will share the duties of cooking. She can continue preparing these excellent meals and I shall make the coffee, if that's all right with you, Lori.
That's fine, Sam. You're too nice a person to have taken up with the likes of him.
I'm so looking forward to traveling with you over all the miles yet ahead of us, Lori. I've always wanted to learn more about the seamy side of life.
No doubt. Since probably the only romance you've ever had is when you kissed your horse.
God damn!
Wellman and Sam were still laughing as they saddled up and rode south. Wellman took the point, and Matt brought up the rear, Sam, Lori, and the pack horses between them. It promised to be a very exciting trip, in more ways than one. The small band turned more west than south, keeping the Puerco to the south of them. They stopped and cooked supper several hours before sunset. Then they moved on several miles before making a cold camp for the night. Matt and Lori had little to say to one another and did their best to avoid each other, much to the relief of Sam and Wellman.
We'll be in Horsehead Crossing in a couple of days. We can resupply there and rest for a day, prowl around and see if we can pick up any information. And my bones is telling me we got someone on our back trail.
They're laying back. It's probably that bunch we met back at the trading post, Porter and his gang. Porter wants you, Lori. He called you a stray.
I know him. I've been on my own since I was 14, cooking in two-bit towns, drifting while I looked for my brother.
Your brother is probably all Apache by now. And I don't mean that in an ugly way.
I know you don't. And I realize that if he's still alive, he no longer thinks of himself as white. He was just a boy when they took him. I was 8 years old. That was almost 13 years ago. I don't have to see him or even get close to him. I just want to know if he's still alive, Indian or white. He's the only family I have except for some cousins back east that I've never even seen. Do you understand, Matt? Any of you?
I think we all understand, Laurie. Truce?
Matt held out his hand. She took his hand. Her hand was not lady soft, but rough and calloused. Matt could sense the strength in her flowing through her hand. The young woman had done a lot of hard work in her life, making her way alone in a predominantly man's world.
Truce, Matt. But you wouldn't know a good cup of coffee if it was poured on you.
Laurie and Sam were hitting it off well, and both Matt and the old mountain man were glad to see it. Sam was usually very standoffish around women, and Wellman had said that Laurie just flat-out didn't trust men.
Maybe some good will come out of this fool's errand after all.
You think this is a fool's mission?
Yeah, in a way. Even if we find that old fort, and it's sort of fuzzy in my mind exactly where it is, how the hell are three men and a child going to fight our way in and get the girls out?
Laurie's no child, Dick.
Maybe not to you, but she is to me.
If you don't think there's a chance, why did you start out?
I'm 7 years old, boy. I took a lot of lead in my time and three arrowheads. One's still in me, and it's done moved. It ain't where it was all these years. I done been to three doctors, and they all say the same things. They can't operate because they don't know where it is, and that I could drop dead any time if the arrowhead hit some vitals, or be paralyzed if it lodges next to my backbone. Now, that's all right. Not being able to walk or ride ain't. Besides, this girl them crud took is a favorite of mine. I ain't talking no granddaughter. She's my great-granddaughter. My Mary Young.
Head for the rocks to your left!
Why there?
There's water and good graze behind them rocks!
Then there was no more time for hollered conversation. Only survival. Whoever it was shooting at them were in positions above them, at the top of the canyon walls. When they reached the protective covering of the rocks, Matt saw blood on Sam's face.
Piece of rock hit me. I'm all right. Who are they, Matt? Did you see anything?
Nothing. But if they were Apaches, they wouldn't have screwed up the ambush. Porter and his bunch, probably. Hold down the place. I'm going to look for water.
As he inspected the flat among the rocks, he knew they had lucked out. It would take an army storming the place to get to them. Now, if there was just water. He crawled up into the rocks, his Winchester cradled in his arms and dragging his canteen by the strap. Being careful not to expose himself, Matt found a notch and peeked out. He grinned at what he saw. Across from him, and some feet below his position, on the lip of the canyon wall, he could plainly see several men squatted down behind rocks. Matt leveled his rifle and sighted in. He shot one through the head. He shifted the muzzle and got another in the belly just as the man jumped up to run for better cover. The outlaw fell head first over the lip of the wall. He landed on the hard pack below and did not move. Matt scooted back a few feet and continued his search for water. He found the tank high up in the rocks, and it was in a shady location and full. Matt drank deeply of the coolness, then found himself a comfortable spot with a good view and settled in. Sooner or later, one of the outlaws would get careless and expose himself. It would be his last careless act. Bodine pulled a piece of jerky out of his pocket and chewed on it slowly, savoring the juices. He had plenty of time. Looking down from his high perch, he could see the others in the party settling down in secure positions. The horses had been placed behind boulders, and Laurie was with them, calming them down. Matt didn't want to give away his new position just yet, so he waited and watched.
Well, man!
What do you want, punk?
The goat and the woman. Give them up and you can ride on.
Go to hell!
We got water and graze, Wellman, so we'll just wait you out.
Porter had the advantage. Graze was a problem. Bodine and his group had water for the animals and a few hatfuls of corn, but that was it when it came to feed. It wouldn't last long.
Well now, I reckon I'll just open this dance and see how they like the tune.
Matt searched carefully until he found a target, and he had to look twice to make sure it was what he thought it was. One of Porter's men had part of his boot exposed, the front part. Matt sighted in, took up slack on the trigger, and let the rifle fire itself. The shots drew no blood from those positioned safely in the rocks. After that, Porter and his bunch were more careful, and the morning passed into midday with only a few shots being fired from the other side of the canyon. Then Sam saw an opportunity. He carefully sighted on one man and shot him through the kneecap.
Ah! Oh, shit! Jesus, it hurts! You son of a bitch! Oh, God! Oh, God! Oh, God!
About 4 o'clock, the shadows beginning to purple and lengthen, Porter and his bunch gave it up and rattled their hawks out of there. Matt stayed in his position and watched them ride out, first to the west, then cutting south. Two men were riding, tied in their saddles.
It looks like they're riding toward Horsehead Crossing. I'm coming down.
How many of them?
I'd say a good 20, still sitting their saddles and able to fight. Let's bury those we dropped.
Oh, to hell with them. They know what they was getting into when they jumped us. Leave them for the varmints to eat on. I might have a part in burying heathen.
Matt and Sam took the dead men's guns and ammunition and caved in part of the canyon wall over their bodies. Dick Wellman would have no part in the burying. He stayed in the shade on the other side of the canyon with Lori. The mountain man was hard as nails and true to his unwritten and uncompromising code. They rode out of the canyon with about an hour of daylight left them. Dick took the point, heading them west and a little south. The route would take them to Horsehead Crossing. Dick's plan was to cross the river and recross to come in south of the town. All of them expected to run into Porter and his gang in Horsehead Crossing, and by the set of Wellman's jaw, he was going to push the point when he caught up with them. There was a mean look in the old mountain man's eyes, and he rode with his Winchester across his saddle horn.
We got enough to worry about with what's ahead of us. Damn if I want to keep looking over my shoulder for Patchy's and Porter's crew. When we catch up with them, I ain't gonna be no Christian about it. I'm going in shooting, boys.
Should be interesting when we reach Horsehead Crossing.
Very.
Horsehead Crossing in the mid-1870s was a wide-open, anything-goes town. Shootings were common, and the town marshal stayed out of it, unless it was a back shooting. Then he would have to get involved, however reluctantly. Just outside of the town, but not too far out, for this was Apache country, the quartet passed several hardscrabble farm and ranch houses. From all appearances, the families who occupied those ratty-looking dwellings were just barely hanging on, for most settlers came west with more ambition than money.
Horsehead Crossing's just a few miles yonder. Now, there ain't no point in shilly-shallying around us, boys. We'll ride in, stable our horses, put Miss Laurie up in a hotel if there is one, and then we'll go hunting Porter and the rest of them no goods. That all right with you all?
Not to me, it ain't. You're not about to stick me in some fucking flea bag while you go off and have all the fun. And I can shoot just as good as any of you, maybe better with a rifle.
Lori had a Winchester 44 stuck in her saddle boot, and Wellman had told Matt and Sam that the little lady knew how to use it and would not hesitate to do so.
Suits me. But what are you going to do if we have to go inside a saloon?
Go right in there with you.
The world sure is changing. Women riding astride and wearing men's breeches. Next thing you know, they'll be getting the vote.
And won't that be a glorious day?
Lori smiled, her teeth very white against her tanned face. Most town and city ladies of that day avoided the sun in order to maintain a white, unmarred complexion. Wellman swung his horse's nose toward Horsehead Crossing and a showdown with the Porter gang. The quartet rode in using the back streets of the small town, swinging in at a livery stable. They dismounted and beat the trail dust off their clothes as they headed for the trough to splash water on their faces. Finally, they hunkered down and began to carefully clean and reload their firearms. The man who ran the stable was standing back in the shade of the huge barn, eyeballing the group nervously and looking at Lori's attire.
You, boys and, lady, want me to look after your horses?
Yeah, rub them down good, give them all the grain they want to eat. And watch that brown gelt the lady rode in on. He's a bad one. Kicked the snot out of you, or bite your arm off.
He looked at Lori's gelding, who was looking all wall-eyed at him.
Yes, sir. How about them pack horses?
The same treatment.
Big bunch of sorry-looking hombres riding here some hours ago. Some of them shot up.
Yes, sir. They sure did. They all staying over at the hotel. But they in the saloon now. That one.
He pointed up the street.
You got law here?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Sort of. There ain't much county law, housemember. But we got us a town marshal. That's his office yonder.
He in?
Oh, yes, sir. He ain't left the office since them hard cases hit town. Takes all his meals inside the jail.
Hey, some rowdy, huh?
You could say that.
You ain't seen us now, partner. You keep your butt right here, seeing to them horses of ours, you hear?
Yes, sir. I'm a-fixin' to start currying and feeding right now.
The liveryman got to his work, doing his best to remain deaf, dumb, and blind.
I got an idea.
Well, let's hear it.
Let's go see the marshal.
What for?
Let's see if he'll deputize us.
Oh, I don't need no stinking badge to slap on a snake. I ain't never toted no badge in my life, and damned if I intend to start now. I saddle my own horses.
It was just an idea.
Just how hot Wilman was became very evident as they began walking up the street. A young dandy with shiny guns tied down low stepped out of the saloon and froze when he spotted the quartet.
Got one of them?
Yes.
Hey, punk! Drag iron, you little weasel! One less. Now let's go clean out a snake pit.
Up and down the main street of town, shutters were being banged shut and secured, curtains drawn, and people getting off the dusty street. Men were rushing out to grab the reins of saddle horses and pulling wagons out of the line of fire. In less than a minute, the wide street was void of life. A strange silence quickly settled over the little town. The bat wings of the saloon slammed open, and two gunnies stepped out to see what all the noise was about. They saw the dead dandy, his blood staining the dirt beneath him, his own guns still in leather. The two gunslicks grabbed for their pistols. The two outlaws never had a chance. A deadly fusillade of .44 slugs tore into them, knocking them spinning and jerking to the rough and warped boardwalk. One caught a spur between boards and fell awkwardly, smashing through a front window into the saloon.
I'm going to the back of the saloon. Don't shoot me.
Well, don't get in the way.
Good hunting.
A voice called out from inside the sheriff's office.
What the hell's going on?
We're snake hunting. You want to come out and join us?
Hell no. Boys, just hunt on and then get gone out of my town so as I won't have to arrest you.
Man, that'll be the damn day when the likes of you arrest me.
Wellman stepped up onto the boardwalk, presenting less of a target to those in the saloon.
You stay behind me, Laurie. Sam, you with us?
Right here. I have an idea, Wellman. Let's wait until Bodine comes in the back shooting, and we'll hit the front at the same time, more or less.
I'm going in right now. Leave, follow, or get the hell out of the way.
Wellman was gone in a bow-legged lope.
The man does have a mind of his own, doesn't he?
You just noticed?
Laurie was gone after Wellman.
Oh, perdition.
Bodine leaned his rifle against a wall and rounded the corner of the saloon with both hands filled with Colts. He ran right into a gunny, running out toward the alley he'd just left. The outlaw's hands were also filled with pistols. It was point-blank range, and Matt was the first to fire. Two more ran out the back door and around the other side of the building before Matt could fire. Bodine let them go and stepped into the darkness of the storeroom. Matt knew that some of Porter's men, probably including Porter, were getting away. He put that out of his mind and opened the door to the saloon. Wellman was standing to the left of the bat wings, Laurie to the right, and Sam was crouched in the center of the broken bat wings. The three of them had turned the barroom into a smoky hell. Moaning men lay writhing in pain on the floor, sprawled across tables and hanging one-handed and dying on the upper bar rail. The two barkeeps had hit the floor behind the long bar and were hugging the sawdust.
Don't leave me out of this, boys!
A gunny turned, his face filled with fear and fury. He pointed a pistol at Bodine. Another got to his knees, blood leaking from a shoulder wound, and leveled his pistol at Sam. Bodine finished what someone else had started. Laurie leveled a rifle. Then, it was over. An eerie silence fell like a shroud over the gun-smoke-filled room. Matt began walking through the bloody sprawl. None of the high-priced guns he and Sam had seen back at the trading post were down and dying, and neither was Porter.
You see that yellow-bellied Porter?
No, but I did see some men living out the back door and then heard some others running down the outside steps.
Oh, that figures. That was Porter and some of the other ones with him. And Porter was in the lead, you can bet on it. That man's a coward.
Matt looked over at Lori. The young woman's face was flushed, but other than that, she appeared calm. Lori met his gaze, and for a very brief moment, the two stood staring at each other, silent messages passing between them. Lori's face flushed even deeper.